Good evening. You're listening to Going Global for Spirit with Elaine Ireland on bbsradio.com. We are the number one worldwide internet talk radio network on the planet. That's a mouthful to say. And this evening I have with me Elaine Ireland, Michelle Avante. Did I say that correctly?
Yes, you did. I'm Michelle Avante.
Okay. Author of a wonderful book, Grihi is the way I pronounce it, The Journey of Five, Tale of Tamur, Book One, which means that we're going to have many books, and after you read this book, you're going to understand why. I read it in an afternoon. I didn't want to put it down.
Awesome.
It was fun. But let me tell you, let me tell the folks a little bit about you. She's an award-winning author, journalist, and metaphysical minister. I love that term, metaphysical minister. Articles, columns, feature stories have appeared in magazines and newspapers since 1985. Michelle has been, you've been both a guest speaker and an MC on over 1,400 radio programs. That's a lot.
Now, I think it's actually about 1,500 at this point, but yeah.
Wow, that's a lot. You're an urbanite to a horse rancher. I want to hear about that.
Okay.
From an army sergeant to New York City cab driver. I love that.
Yeah, I've done a lot.
She's a born psychic. You've taught metaphysics since 72. Now, tell me what ISAR means, because it certified you as an astrology professional. And
yeah, ISAR is an international society. That's what it stands for, actually, International Society for Astrological Research.
I've been in this field for a long time, and I guess because I'm an astrologer, I wasn't aware of that organization.
Yeah, ESAR's been around a long time. They give research grants to astrologers. I've been offered some over the past 15 years, but I always turn them down because I don't really have time to do the research. I'd sure love to, but don't always have the time. So
Another thing that I liked about this is that you you're healing. Your concern for healing and the world as we know it has led you to become an emotional freedom practitioner. What is that?
EFT is this just amazing technique that was discovered by Dr. Callahan, of psychiatrist, back in about 1991 or 92. I think it was 91 he discovered it. He had been working with a client for, I think, 3 years at the time, and she was afraid of water. She had such a terrible fear of water that giving a bath to her own baby was a terrifying experience for her. And he had worked to try to get her past that phobia. And at the point in time where he discovered EFT, he had been studying acupressure points and the meridians in the human body. And while he was doing a session with her, she was staring at the swimming pool, and he said, "What do you feel?" And she said, "I feel like my stomach is turning over." She was so terrified. And he said, "Well, try tapping right below the center of your eye, which is the point that connects to the stomach." And he said, "Let's tap there and let's start saying a few things." And he started using some positive affirmations and some releasing affirmations. And the next thing you know, this woman jumped up and ran over to the pool to touch the water. And that was the moment that we first discovered emotional freedom technique, which is tapping on the meridians in the body in order to release trauma that has been basically captured by the astral or emotional body. And it releases that sap, and the next thing you know, the human can still remember and recall everything that happened, but it doesn't affect them the way that it did previously.
I think I need to delve into that.
it's absolutely incredible. The things I've witnessed with my own clients are phenomenal, and I mean phenomenal. People who have lost children, who have been molested, people who have had real hard experiences with parents or with children or with mates, and have been blocked because of those things, where in just maybe an hour and a half, we release them completely from those emotional traumas, and they're able then to freely move forward. It's just absolutely the most heartwarming experience.
How does that work with psychiatrists, the things that psychiatrists do?
Well, the issue with psychiatry takes a long time. It's a long process a lot of the time. where they start somewhere and they slowly, slowly unravel a life and unravel an issue, and then they work to help heal the individual through that issue. So it can be a very slow process, and that's probably the advantage EFT has over it, and that's why I think there are quite a few psychiatrists and psychiatrists who are jumping on this bandwagon now and learning EFT, because they can use it in their practice, and it will take the client steps beyond much faster. I know that being a metaphysical minister, I'm able to do that with people, and have for years. I've had clients literally say to me, well, you're so much cheaper than going to a psychiatrist, and you move me so much faster. I could never, I had a woman probably back in, I want to say 1991 or two, who said to me, she wrote me a letter and said, you know, the issues with my father, I could never have even identified, but you brought me right to them, I faced them, and now I'm beyond them. And that's because the spiritual beings know exactly what's going on in your life. I don't know anything. I'm just a telephone. So.
You know, I have said for years, and I've heard other psychics say it too, that psychics are the most underpaid therapists in the world.
I'm sure we are. Well, you know, for us, it's a gift Spirit has given us that our channel is a little more open. And, you know, I had somebody ask me a few days ago, actually, well, you call yourself a psychic, so what does that mean, and how do you feel about that? And I said, you know, I don't really call myself a psychic. I said I happen to be psychic, but I don't call myself such because to do so is to separate me from everyone else. And you know what? We're all psychic. Everyone is soul. Everyone is a spiritual being, and you can't help but be psychic. However, my channel might be a little open more than yours.
I didn't mean to get us off task here, but I saw that, and I really wanted an explanation of it. Michelle is going to be back with us a number of times throughout the rest of the year talking about many subjects. So the next time she'll be with us will be August the 14th talking about archetypes. But folks out there, this is a call-in show. It is a worldwide show. Let me give you two phone numbers. The United States and Canada share a number. That number is 1-888-228-4494. If you live any place else in the world, you use 877-489-6350. This is Going Global for Spirit with Elaine Ireland. I am with Michelle Avante, the writer of Tales of Timor, and this book won some awards. Tell us what it won.
Well, actually, it won two awards last year. One was for Best Juvenile Fiction from the Northern California Publishers and Authors Group, and that was a nice award. But then I won the award from COVR, which is Coalition of Visionary Resources, which is an international group, and I was totally blown away. I won the award for Visionary Fiction Finalists. They gave away three finalists, three awards for Visionary Fiction. And visionary fiction, I didn't even know what it meant when I won the award, but what it stands for is that the reader, when they finish your book, will have a greater vision for their own world. So, huge honor.
Huge, yes. Because I saw that COVR, and I'm a teacher, and I kept thinking, what is COVR? That must be a new award since I left the classroom.
Yeah, it's been around for a little bit of a while, but it was new to me. And a friend of mine had won it some years back for her book on death and dying, and I thought, geez, I should apply for that. And so I did, and my gosh, I won it. It blew me away. The other finalist was Llewellyn Publishing. And they've been around for 104 years, and their author, it was her 25th book, so an enormous honor to me.
This book is published by?
Rehe Publishing.
Aha.
Yes, okay. I own the publishing house, so it's a new experience.
Boy, are you on a journey of your own.
Yes, Spirit said, no, you've got to go do this, and you got to do it now, and... So I am. I do whatever they ask me to do. Sometimes I balk a little, but I do go.
Well, the cover shows a wonderful green dragon with a sweet face and hair on his chin and a little bit of purple in him, and with a lovely fairy hanging on to him with pretty blonde hair and iridescent wings. And I looked at that and went, okay, this is going to be fun. And it is. It's when you first, folks out there, when you first start reading this book, it comes across as a children's book, but it's a wonderful sort of elementary, although the language in it, phonics wise, might be a little difficult, but junior high, even high school reading, it's a kid's book, but at the same time, teaches a lot of lessons. And I, as an adult, I thought it was just charming and fun, but every now and then I would get a real aha. And I even have pink and red and blue tabs here on things towards the back of the book after some of the battles.
When the
wisdom starts spewing, which is really fun. And we can't forget your artist. The artwork in this book is beautiful. One of them is Jane Starr, with two R. She pronounced her last name Wiles?
Wales.
Wales. You can find her work at www.janestarrweils.com. And Carol Phillips, www.carolphillips.art.com. Beautiful artwork. How did you find these ladies to add to that?
Oh, my. You know, I looked for cover artist, and really it was the cover artist that kicked me into gear to complete the book, which the spiritual beings had told me that would happen. But the original illustrator I spoke with, she was out of my price range. And then I came across a secondary artist, and she just never did anything. And then the next thing you know, I talked to my friend who owns In Light Times out of Las Vegas, and she says, Michelle, I have the artist for you. And she introduced me to Jane Starr Wales, and the next thing you know, I had a painting. So I've been really pleased. I hired her. She's contracted for all five books. So you have to see the cover of the second book. I know you've seen the black and white, but in color mm-hmm. it's stunning.
I love it. I have to say, though, that this little tease of little page, this is not the image I had of that gentleman.
Oh, of Potemkin?
Yes, that's not the image I had of him.
Well, that's okay. We all have different images, and he's very handsome, and he's a young man. And most people, when you might be reading it, you might be thinking he's an old man. He's not.
No.
He's
no,
only 22 in the book.
I had him young. He's stunning.
he is very handsome.
Tell us about the book. How did Grihi introduce himself to you?
Well, you know, back in 19, I have two degrees, two BFA degrees. I'm an artist as well as a photographer, in addition to being an author. But I was in 1981 in my studio painting a picture, and a unicorn appeared to me. And he asked me to paint this picture, and I said, well, I'll paint your picture if you tell me a story. And he began to tell me a story, which is the backstory to the book that you have in your hands. Later on in 1984, the winter of 1984, I began to follow the energy and started writing the book.
How long did it take you to write it?
Well, if you compress all the time, probably about 2 years. There were periods of time where I put it down. I began writing in November of 1984, and in April, the end of March 1985, I lost a child. I buried a little girl, and put the book down then and didn't pick it up again until, as the spiritual beings told me I would, they said, you'll pick it up when the illustrator appears. And in the year 2000, a person who I'd known for a couple of years, who actually I'd known her for like 7 years, I didn't know she was a children's illustrator. And for some reason, I asked her that summer when I saw her, and she says, well, that's what I do for a living, Michelle. And I thought, how could I not know this? I saw her only as a metaphysical artist. And so she said, I'll read the manuscript. And when she read it, she just loved it. And I finished it. She said, where's the rest of it? And I finished it in just like 4 months. I was done.
Well, tell the public, and don't forget public, please join us. Ask questions, not necessarily just about the book, but of anything you can think of that you would like to know about Michelle. and about her work. She does so many things. I'm excited about connecting with Michelle and having her on again and again throughout the year. It's going to be fun, the topics. But tonight, I was really touched by this story. It's one of those books that I would have picked up and read after lunch to my kids to settle them down.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a wonderful honor to hear you say that. It's a story about self-discovery, but more than just self-discovery. It's a story for all of us at this particular time. What the spiritual beings have said to me since 1997-98 is the most important thing we can learn at this time. The most important thing that must be learned at this time is to love ourselves. And that's what this story is about. No matter who you are, no matter what you're like, no matter what your parents tell you, no matter what your society or culture seems to indicate that makes you feel less than being supremely wonderful, it's time for you to love yourself because you are supremely wonderful. You are an angelic being. You are a magnificent being, and you are adored. And that's what this book is about.
I like what you, Greehy is an adolescent dragon wanting nothing more than love and approval from his father. Boy, if that's not a mighty statement.
Don't we all want that?
From somebody, yeah.
Yes.
And his father happens to be Tareem the Terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But Greehy is nothing like his father at all. He's very kind and he's soft-hearted and he's a deep-thinking dragon, although he doesn't realize that, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
But he has no idea who he is, and so he hides. And I used to see kids do that.
Mm-hmm.
It is so
true that we go through a period of time when we're very, very young. We're completely open to being who we are, but what we quickly learn is that society has rules, and they are rules that are defined by our family, our culture, our spiritual pathway, that is, whatever our parents are promoting, and by the peers and the pressures that come to us. And we try to adjust ourselves to all of those factors. And some of them are important to adjust to. Certainly you don't want to say things blatantly to someone that might hurt you, or touch something that you shouldn't touch. But nonetheless, there are things where you need to have the freedom to expand and be more of who you are. And some parents are very good at doing that, and other parents are not. And what you have to learn eventually is that who you are is a gift to the rest of the world. And that is a challenge, depending on how you're raised.
One of the other things that you pull out of this book is Tana, and she's the representation of evil. So how does one overcome evil? That question's asked in the book by one of the characters. But why is anyone evil? That, too, is asked about in the book. And by the end of the book, we understand that about evil, and somehow it's discovered that it's not conquered by anger, hate, or bloodshed, but rather by love. And that's one of the lessons taught by the unicorn in the book, which I think is just beautiful. But one of the things that you and I were going to talk about later in the season is why does evil exist? Why would we write about evil and even acknowledge it?
It's a wonderful question. Well, the whole issue of the lower worlds is that, and when I say the lower worlds, in order to incarnate into a physical body, you have to come into a denser space of matter. The soul is a very fine being. It is an energy. It is a structure that is not a structure. It is a structureless structure, if you can say such a thing, because it is a paradox. But in order to be in a physical body, you have to come into density. And in a space of density, we have light and dark, because we have lightness and we have heaviness. We have opposites. And as we have opposites, then so do we have good and evil. Although people are coming to an understanding, which I truly bow to Dr. Hawkins, because he has certainly helped with that, that in reality there is no evil, but rather there is the absence of good, which is a completely different statement. And why we have to have any of this and why do we come to the lower worlds has to do with the experience that expands our ability to be compassionate. when you are always in a harmonious space, you don't understand what compassion could possibly be. And in order for you to be a creator, to be a fully developed master creator, which is what Spirit has offered you, you must understand with tremendous compassion all levels of consciousness.
That's a lot.
Well, you know, we're all capable of it.
We're all capable. That's scary in a way.
Well, that's one of the things. You know, I'm writing, and I've been going to write a treatise on magic for forever. One of these days I will finally get to it. I've only talked about it a gazillion times. But magic is an interesting thing. You know, when I was a little kid, one of my very best favorite stories of all time is the story Sylvester and the Magic Pebble. I don't know if you know the story.
Oh, goodness. I haven't thought about that story in years.
Yes, but almost everybody's probably read it. It's been around forever, and it's a wonderful, wonderful little tale about a little donkey and his mom and dad, and he likes to collect rocks, and they go out for a picnic, and there on the ground, he goes off from the family as they're setting up the picnic, and he finds a rock, and he sees it, and he thinks, oh, this is the most beautiful rock in the whole world. I just love this little rock. And he picks it up. It's really a pebble. And a big lion appears, and he says, I wish I were a rock. It's the first thought he has. And the next thing you know, he turns into a rock, and it turns out it was a magic pebble. And, of course, the story does eventually resolve, and he comes back as a donkey again. But magic is something that has been treated in so many forms over so many millennia that people come to think that there is something called magic that is outside, and we have to go search for it to get it. And the real truth is, you are the magic.
Did you hear that, public? You are the magic. Welcome back. I understand we have a caller.
Hi, can you hear me?
Barely. Can you speak a little louder? You sound like a whisper.
Yeah, I'm trying to talk loud into my phone without yelling.
What is your first name?
First name is Jojo.
Jojo, welcome to the show. Do you have a comment or a question for Michelle?
Well, I was just listening, and just what she has been talking about, just the synchronicity of talking about the contrast of being here, having to see darkness and light to understand harmony. And magic. I mean, magic's been flowing through my life for the past few days in terms of watching movies or just coming through. So, I don't know. I figure just let her keep talking about magic because it makes sense to me.
Well, good. Then we've touched something in your spirit. Michelle, do you have a comment?
I just appreciate you calling in, Jojo. I hope your synchronicity continues.
Well, thank you. And do you have a website, Michelle?
I do. I have several websites, but my main one is astrologyandmore.com. It's A-N-D-M-O-R-E, astrology, A-S-T-R-O-L-O-G-Y, A-N-D-M-O-R-E.com. And you can always put my name in, and you'll catch all kinds of information about me.
Okay.
Her last name is spelled A-V-A-N-T-I.
And my first name is only with one L.
M-I-C-H-E-L-E.
Not to be confused with another lady who has stolen my name.
Uh-oh.
We don't want to go there.
And I kind of started listening to the program a few minutes into it.
Uh-huh.
Are both of you psychic?
Yes, I am a practicing psychic. And Michelle?
Yes, I'm a metaphysical minister. I was born psychic. And you're psychic too, Jojo. We're all psychic.
Yes.
No one is not psychic. You're a soul. Soul is psychic.
That's why I use the term practicing psychic.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do it for other people. I'm paid sometimes for it. So I am a practicing psychic, but all of us are psychic, Jojo. It just depends on how much you choose to develop it and how you choose to use it.
Yeah, the skill level.
Yeah.
Yes, and also it can be what you came in, your mission in this lifetime may define to what degree you allow that. For example, there are people whose job in this lifetime, they must achieve something that is very mundane. It may be being an attorney or being an accountant. And therefore, they can't allow too much of that psychic ability to be noticed. So they do it a different way.
And they do it with instinct.
Yeah, right. They might call it a gut feeling or an instinct or whatever. It doesn't matter. You're still, your soul, you're tuning in. And what you're tuning into is the 360-degree viewpoint that soul has. You are never without that ability. And when you have that, there is nothing that is not available to you. You're limitless.
Say that again, Michelle. I think other people need to hear that.
Well, you are completely limitless. When you tune into your ability as soul has a 360-degree viewpoint. It understands and knows everything. And as a result of that, that is available to you at all times. The biggest challenge that we have is that we've come into this life after many, many, and I'm not saying everyone because there are some new children coming in who are not, but the majority of us have incarnated many times, and therefore we've been trained over millennia to believe that something else outside of ourselves is really the magic. And so we create matrixes. From early parts, in early centuries, we started with candles. When you light this candle and you say a prayer, you shall have what you want if you have been true in your request. So we've created magic in the candle. We've made the candle the matrix, or the flame the matrix, or the statue the matrix, or the god the matrix. All of them are matrixes because you really are the magic. You are soul. And being that spark of God, you are a limitless being with all the power of creation within your universe.
But you have to believe it if it's going to work.
Yeah,
that's,
it's a step beyond belief, even it's knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you will allow soul to open up to that, if you will give yourself the opportunity to step out into that light, they will show you a little bit at a time until you become safe, you feel safe with it. But you have to respond. You know, some people get the message. You know, they run out to their car to go to work, and they feel something say, close your windows, or grab your coat, or take your umbrella, or something else. And they either do it or they don't. Well, if you don't do it enough of the time, spirit is not going to respond to you. It's not going to keep calling. If you do it, they'll call more. Kind of like a friend. If you don't pick up the phone and speak to your friend, over a period of time, they will stop calling. Same thing with spirit. Spirit knocks on the door all the time. If you keep answering, it will just knock more.
Mm-hmm. With bigger requests and bigger responsibilities and more fun.
Absolutely.
Tells us all sorts of things.
And I don't know, is it common on your show to be put on the spot in terms of like a sample reading?
We have a limited amount of time, but if you have one question, maybe you could talk Michelle into it.
Sure, go for it. As long as you're okay with it, Elaine, I'm fine.
I'm fine
absolutely.
With it. We just need to keep it short.
I guess my question, Michelle, would be what information is coming to you for my highest and best good right now?
And what I'm getting, the spiritual being seems to be indicating that you're on the move. You're moving forward. And this move forward is going to be one that brings you greater, not just health, but security. There is money to come. They're saying the next three, it could be 3 weeks, and it feels like 3 weeks to me. You're going to work through some things, and it may be working through to set a new foundation for yourself, and then you're going to start to see things flowing forward for you. There are gains on all levels for you over the next 9 months, and I see someone coming into your world who will be very passionate, and I almost feel like it's a higher part of yourself, but it's not just that. There is also a man who will be coming forward in your life who is a very passionate individual and very creative. So down the road.
Almost like a mentor, maybe?
Could be, because he felt like he had a patriarch energy.
Okay. Wow. Well, thank you.
Thank you for calling in. What part of the country are you living in?
Central Coast of California.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for calling and for listening. Thank
yeah,
you,
thank
JoJo.
You. Have a great night.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye.
Well, I apologize. Seth said the little beeps, and I did not hear the beeps.
You know, as an astrologer, this is that period of time. It happens three times a year. Mercury is retrograde.
Oh, and this one's been a stinker.
It always is this time of year because this is the sign that Mercury normally rules that it's retrograde in. So in Gemini, it's usually the worst one of the year. So
when does this one go out?
It's the end of June, around the 20th, I think, of June.
Do you agree with the 7 days before we enter and 7 days after? We're kind of the residue period, so even though it may be out, we're still experiencing some other nonsense?
Unfortunately, I do agree with it, but I never like to talk about it.
I know. I warn people all the time.
I'm not defending it at all.
Mercury in retrograde, folks. That, and for those of you that may not understand what that means, Mercury, of course, is a planet, and it spins backwards, literally.
No, it doesn't really spin backwards. They call it retrograde because what happens, it's kind of like when you're driving your car. We're going around the sun, and Mercury is closer into the sun than we are, and at certain points in this elliptic move, we appear to move past Mercury. And so as a result of that, it looks like Mercury is actually going backwards.
And it's really not.
And it's not. And then as we come around that curve, Mercury catches up and passes us again. And that's the period where we call it a retrograde. But it doesn't actually go backwards, so.
It just seems like it.
Yes, it certainly does.
But
don't worry about it. It has good things. It can bring people back into your life that you haven't seen for years. All of a sudden, they appear.
That's a good thing.
Yes, and sometimes it can also give you opportunities to renegotiate contracts that you have wanted to renegotiate. It's the best time in the world to do it. So there are good things that happen with Mercury retrograde. For the most part, though, I always say, plan to fix everything you have just around before or during Mercury retrograde. This is your time.
Hmm. For me, it messes things up like airline flights.
Absolutely. Travel, anything that travels and anything that communicates. Which, unfortunately, if you're in mass media of any kind, that's not a real good thing.
Speaking of that, are you going to be going on any speaking tours, or where will you be in the next, say, 60 days?
Well, actually, most of my time in the next 60 days is here in the state of Oregon. I don't have any plans to leave the state at this point. I have the Country Fair coming up in Eugene, which is a big event. I will be doing the Oregon State Fair probably the end of August. I'm doing the Myrtle Creek Summer Festival and Fairy World. So I'm doing quite a few shows this in the next few months.
As a lecturer, a reader?
Some of them I'm doing an exhibit where I'm actually just showing my book and talking to people. Some of them, the Country Fair, for example, I will be there doing some workshops, which is going to be a lot of fun because that's kind of a camp out thing where people come from all over and... I'm going to be doing, I think, dream interpretation with children and teaching creative writing. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Ooh, that does sound like fun. Do you ever do the body, mind, and spirit or the body, mind, and soul fairs?
I have never done any of them, but that doesn't mean I won't at some point down the road. Spirit moves me around and says, go do this or go do that, and I just do.
They often have writers of your caliber, and the body, mind, and spirit and body, mind, and soul are two different groups, but it used to be just body, mind, and soul, and then management split off and created the two energies. But they're pretty good sized fairs, depending on where they are.
I'll have to look into that.
They tend to be three days. You can go online and check body, mind, and spirit, body, mind, and soul.
I will definitely do that.
They have nice big websites. This is Elaine Ireland. You've been going global for spirit with Elaine Ireland, and tonight, Michelle Avante. We're talking about Tales of Grihi, The Journey of Five, Tales of Timur, Book One. A fun book, but one with lots of messages, thanks to Grihi and the fairy and the unicorn, which I just loved his character. If you want to call us, please feel free to call us, United States and Canada. You share a number, 1-888-228-4494. And worldwide, that means any place else other than the United States and Canada, please use 877-489-6350. We welcome your calls. We welcome your questions. if you happen to read the book, we would love to hear your opinion, and just chat with us. We just had a caller from California, JoJo. Thank you very much for calling in again. That was fun. Tell us more about the book, because that's what we're supposed to be talking about.
Well, you know, it's been quite the journey for me writing the book, but because I think any author, when they write, they also discover things about themselves, things that you didn't know. And every character in the book, of course, has a certain amount of the individual author in it. And the book is about, of course, as you spoke before, a dragon. His name is Greeky. He's an adolescent dragon who is born as a result of a prophecy. So he is nothing like any dragon that has ever been born in Tamora before. He has no fierceness. He has a big heart, and he is a deep thinker. And as a result of that, he does not fit in. He does not know his place, and he does not know that he is loved. And the book opens with him attempting to become fierce. He practices what he calls the dragon art, the art of fierceness. And as it opens, he is met basically by a fairy who does not belong in his parts, who he's never met before. He has never met anyone outside of his own father. So this is a completely new experience. And for all the wrong reasons, he agrees to take her home. He is planning on proving himself. He plans to eat her whole family and prove himself to his father that he is fierce. However, he can't even eat the little fairy, so there's not much chance he's going to do anything else. But as
I loved it when he made that decision, or actually that recognition.
Yes, he rationalizes that very nicely.
He does.
And so he begins a journey, and he has no understanding whatsoever of what this journey will be. And you know what? When we're young, a lot of the time that's the case. Your mom or dad might say to you, we're going to go wherever, and you have no idea what it's going to be. It's an adventure, and that's what this is. This is an adventure for Greehy, and it's an adventure for any reader. He does not know what friendship is. He doesn't know what it's like to be loved or be cared for or be have anyone even concerned about him. He has never had those experiences, and before the end of the second chapter, this little fairy who he was determined to eat and could not has saved his life. So his whole life changes, it turns, and of course the prophecy has been activated in the background, and no one really understands the prophecy or knows what it is, and slowly the precocious Lonnie, the fairy, unravels it. She's a go-getter. She is a lot like Greehy and nothing like Greehy. She is very interesting.
Thank you for saying that. There was such a similar energy pattern,
yes.
Reading the book between those two.
Yes, they both are very loving, but see, he doesn't understand that he's loving, and she does. She has had the opposite childhood to him. They're all both very close in age. He's 13 and she's 11, but she's the baby of her family, five children, and her parents adore her. They've given her everything they could give her. They've poured every blessing on her. And so she is precocious and not afraid to ask any question, and just a very happy, optimistic individual. She's the one who asks the question, why would anybody want to be evil, you know? I honestly, you know, growing up in a time where Superman was a big thing, which tells you a lot about my age.
I remember Superman.
Well, when Superman was a big thing, you know, I always wondered, why did Lex Luthor want to be evil? What was his problem? He was so intelligent. Why didn't he just create something and get on with his life?
Do you think that our evil is born evil, or it becomes evil for some reason?
Well, first off, I don't believe there is evil. I want to go with Hawkins and say there is only the absence of good. So I'm going to step into that. Secondly, I will say this, that we have created it. We as individuals in a lower state of consciousness who have continued to incarnate at a deeper and deeper level of physicality have developed it, and we've created it. We've created an absence of goodness in order to experience what it is like. And in doing so,
we've come across something that we didn't understand or know, and that is this issue of power. What is power? Power, when we are standing in the face of evil, one will consider that power is evil in its greatest form, which is like what the president said some years back as we entered Iraq. It is awe and shock, or shock and awe. That's not power. But that is the illusion of power that is created as a result of our creation of the removal of good.
I like the way you created Tana as a representation of evil. I don't want to give away too much about the book, but I liked the way you created her.
She is an interesting character,
mm-hmm.
and of course she goes on and in other forms and. The next book is quite fascinating, so it's coming. It's we take another level where this is Metaphysics 101, Book 1, and you can read it just as a story, or you can go back and read it for the metaphysics. I've been so honored. The Unity Church here in Roseburg has taken the book and used it in their Sunday school classes.
Oh, I can see why.
Mm-hmm.
I said a while ago, this is the kind of book that, even on the second and third and fourth grade level, I would have read it after lunch, a couple
mm-hmm.
of pages, you know, like they do, 10, 15 minutes to settle the kids down, and then talked about the pages that we read and the lessons to be learned. Because even early on, almost from page one or two, you're struck with, why does the dragon feel that way about himself? Why
mm-hmm.
why would he look at himself that way?
Mm-hmm.
So almost every page, you can pick something up and ask a class, or an individual that you're reading with, or two, my goodness, let's talk about that.
Yeah,
that kind of book, folks, and yet it's fun. You can just sit down and just read it.
Yeah.
Read it and look at it as nothing more than a story, and it's very entertaining, and it moves quickly, and when she says that every chapter is a little bit of a cliffhanger, she's right, or you can look at it with a different kind of depth and realize that these characters all have their individual stories separate and apart from what they're doing with each other, which is fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's such a gift to anybody that has questions. I even thought about some questions about myself as I went through it.
Well, that's wonderful.
I was 63 years old.
You know what? I always hope that if I give nothing else to an individual through anything that I write, I do hope that they find love for themselves and they discover something new about who they are and how wonderful they are. And that's what I always wish. So I hope you did.
You know, it's hard for people to look at themselves and say, you're wonderful. Look in the mirror and say, you're wonderful. You're kind.
No, you know, a technique that I give to my clients and have for many, many years is to take the time before you leave your house. A lot of people leave their house every morning and come home every evening. And I say, before you leave, before you grab that doorknob, I want you to take 1 second. I want you to look to the right as if there were a wall with a gigantic mirror there. And I want you to look in that mirror. And I'm not telling you to look at yourself. You'll see your reflection. But I want you to look around your reflection. You're going to see these magnificent beings, these angelic presences. And they're going to be saying something to you. And what they're saying is, we adore you. We are so proud of you that you are going out today into that world of chaos. We will be with you every step of the way, and we have love for you in every second. Please remember us. And when you come home, same thing you should do. Open the door and look to your right. And whether there's a wall there or not, see that gigantic mirror, and they will be there again, and they will say, we are so glad you have come home, that you are whole, and that you, this enormous warrior, are well. We have loved you each moment. We adore you.
Warrior, that's a good analogy for male or female these days.
Yes, we are all warriors in the lower world. We are warriors of Maya. We are warriors of the illusion of the lower world, of a reality that is not real, the reality that we are less than divine.
That's a pretty heavy statement.
We're pretty amazing beings. time for us to wake up and realize that.
I've always believed that we come in with a spirit that has no fear. We come in with spirit that has lessons to learn,
mm-hmm.
and maybe a little bit of anxiety, that human thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the spirit itself experiences none of that.
Well, that's because spirit never actually, the soul that you are, it never leaves the level that is soul's level.
Right.
So it is always in ecstasy. And that's why the greatest thing you can do when you have challenges in your life is to shift your attention to soul's viewpoint. Because when you do, all that you're focusing on changes. And it lifts. It's nowhere near what you thought it was. Because this entire lifetime is nothing more than a blink in time to soul.
A blink in time. That's true. Mm-hmm. I believe that.
Well, there's no time and space on the other side.
Yeah. Maybe that's why sometimes when we're going through something, we feel super, super okay with it. No matter how difficult it is, there's a realization that it really is okay. This is supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the human ego or whatever title you want to put on the rest of that thing, that's just going nuts.
Mm-hmm. That's,
and that's that high-level spirit that never changes.
Right. Well, the lower consciousness, the physical, the astral or the emotional, and the mental consciousnesses are the parts that can weigh us down with fears. Soul has no fear. And that's why you'll hear people when they come out of a car accident and you say, well, are you okay? And you'll hear people from time to time say, you know, I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden I just knew it was going to be okay. It was as though time stopped and everything happened in slow motion, but I just knew it was going to be okay.
Uh-huh. I've had that exact experience in a car wreck. Yeah, going around at what seemed like 1,000 miles an hour, spinning and spinning and spinning,
mm-hmm.
and knowing that the car will stop in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, it was okay.
You're so aligned with your higher self, and the angelic beings that surround you constantly are making certain that you're feeling it. And you're fine. You're fine.
I had my then 4-year-old son in the front seat of the car with me.
Wow.
So many years ago, and this was another incident. We got caught on a railroad track.
I couldn't
get over the railroad track, and out of nowhere comes a train chugging along, not going real fast, but chugging mm-hmm. through a neighborhood. And I couldn't get the car moved, and I couldn't get out of my seatbelt.
Oh, my gosh.
And my 4-year-old puts his arm, and, of course, he's tagged in.
Mm-hmm.
And he puts his arm on my shoulder, and he says, Mommy, count to three. It's okay. A 4-year-old.
Wow.
And I counted to three, and I got out of my seatbelt and got him out of the car before the train came.
Oh, my Lord.
And it just seemed like something was holding the train.
Yeah. Oh, my Lord.
It was weird. I mean, he's a 4-year-old.
No, you know what? The age is irrelevant. This is something that I teach my clients all the time, you know, when they're concerned about a child. Please, please remember, yes, you are the responsible party to make sure that they learn the skills necessary to work in the physical reality. But they're souls. They're not just a little tiny baby. They're soul, and soul is equally powerful and limitless. And they're more connected normally when they're children than they are when they're adults.
I tell people all the time, they're still going back and forth between the veil, at least peeking through it on a regular basis.
Yep, unless we stop them.
Uh-huh.
Yep. They're divine beings. You know, it's sometimes hard for a mother to separate that, but that's true. And, you know, there are times where parents say, I don't understand what happened to my child. I don't understand. You know, I trained them, I taught them all the good things, I gave them everything, and now they're doing this. And I will always tell the parent that this is a point in time that may be karmic. Because because we all have karmic points we've come to resolve, and sometimes they look pretty ugly. And if it is a karmic point, there's nothing you can do to change it. There's nothing you can do to bring that child back. That child has to go through it, and then they will come back.
It sounds like the characters in your story are working off karma in their own right.
Each their own way. Absolutely.
In each their own way, yeah.
Yes. And each character actually represents a different level of consciousness. They represent a preponderance of each of the levels. There's the physical, the astral, the mental, and the etheric, and then the spiritual level or the soul level. So there are five beings, and each is a preponderance of one of them. And you can really note which levels they are when Yulul, the fairy council, gives each one a magic potion.
Uh-huh. I love that. I love that scene.
Yeah, it's interesting how they use them, and I'm always amazed.
When you were putting the book together, did you set out with some characters, or as you wove the story, the characters appeared?
Well,
one by one.
What I did was what any person who has traveled the inner worlds most of their life does. I just simply went to the energy where Greehy was and traveled with him. And my biggest challenge was to give to the reader enough information without giving them too much information, because at every step of the way, I could feel, experience, understand every thought and every emotion of every single character in every single scene.
That's what makes this book so good, I'm sure, a big part of it, because you poured it in. You poured it into the character.
Yeah, well, it is them. It's who they are. And even though, you know, I had one person say to me, one editor a long time ago, when they first read the first manuscript, they said, "But Lonnie is such a pure being." And I said, "Well, you know, Lonnie has her shortcomings, but they're not so noticeable when she stands next to everyone else."
We all have our shortcomings,
and depending on what our state of consciousness is, they're not always so noticeable. It's interesting how we all develop.
She has a stubborn streak that I thought was interesting.
She does. And she also sometimes doesn't have quite the social skills she should either. Even though she, you know, because she's royal, of course she doesn't use that, but that has caused her not to have some of the social skills she should have.
I'm looking at the clock as much as I dislike it, but in about 2 minutes, Sweet Seth is going to make us go away. So I have to thank you, so I don't have to do it in a hurry, and let folks know that you're going to be back with us in August. I think it's the 14th. Where are my notes? Yes, the 14th of August. We're going to be talking about archetypes. I can never say that word right.
Archetypes.
All about one's real nature based on your date of birth. And she says she can do this in less than 90 seconds, so we're going to time her.
Oh, yeah, I do archetypes very quickly, so people can call in and we can do their archetypes, and they'll be amazed.
It says that this is the basis for your book due out in August, entitled Secrets of Wisdom. Are we going to see that on the bookshelves by August?
Probably not. I've been talking about it for forever, but I may get it into the MP3 form and have it available on MichelleAvanti.com, which we're about to open up here in the next few months. So hopefully this fall, hopefully by the fall equinox.
Fall equinox. I like the fall equinox. I love that time of year.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
This is Going Global for Spirit with Elaine Ireland. Tonight my guest has been the creator of Greehy, The Journey of Five, Tales of Tamur, Book 1, Michelle Avante. You can find her on your favorite website. Say it again.
Astrologyandmore.com, or you can go to talesoftamur.com, or you can just put in Avante, an astrologer, or metaphysics, or Greehy, and Google it, you'll find me.
Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-E, Avante, A-V-A-N-T-I, is how you can find her. Thank you so much for being with us this evening. I'm looking forward to you being back in August. Of course, we'll talk before then, I'm sure.
Thanks so much, Elaine. You have a wonderful night.
Thank you. Good night, everybody. Safe travels. Good night.